Shall we take a reading from the book of Psalms? And Psalm number 46. The book of Psalms and number 46. To the chief musician for the sons of Korah, a song upon Alamoth. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still, know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Well, that will do for our reading, and maybe if I said nothing, the reading of a passage like this would do its own good to our souls. Since I arrived in North America just a few days after the tragedies of what has come to be called Terrible Tuesday, I have spent a good little bit of time reading various articles that have been written in connection with those sad events. From what we hear on the news today, it seems as if the saga is going on still, and the hearts of many are being gripped with a greater sense of uncertainty. And I think it is fitting that in a meeting such as this, with the Lord's people gathered, that we should come to find our comfort in the Holy Scriptures. I noticed in one of the Time magazines, I was referring to this the other night in one of the meetings, in the Time magazine, perhaps the week after the tragedy, amongst the many different articles that were written, there was one article written with the following title: How Safe Can We Really Be? The article proceeded for two or three pages, and the writers, they investigated various channels of human safety. They considered the security of the intelligence forces. They considered the technology of very sophisticated machinery. And they covered quite a bit of ground. And when the article was over, the bottom line conclusion was this: that as far as the neighboring country, the United States of America, is concerned, that great country cannot make its citizens really safe. Today I'm answering that question from the Bible. How safe can we really be? I liked what I read in another article, because there was a veteran from the Gulf War. He made a statement in one of the papers in Canada that I thought touched the mark exactly. He said, "True safety is not to be found in distance from danger. True safety is to be found in closeness to God." I think that is the answer. One of the comforts that we do have in these times of trouble, that we have men in the Bible who faced similar situations. And now, with the benefit of hindsight, we can come to the book of inspiration and we can find that the very truths which were a strength and stay to saints in previous generations, they are valid to this very present hour. I judge that the psalm from which we have taken our reading today is a psalm which finds its historical location in the days of Hezekiah. The land of Palestine at that particular period, the end of the 8th century BC, it was being overrun by the march of the mighty Assyrian Empire. That empire was merciless in its cruelty. It was taking into the gullet of its political greed one country of the ancient world after another. It had swept across what the ancients called the Fertile Crescent. The Mediterranean basin of that day was gripped with terror because the ominous cloud of the Assyrian terror was just upon the horizon like a black fist. With such a threat, I think it's beautiful to turn to a psalm like this. And some of the poets of Hezekiah's day, they said, God. You will notice 7 times in this psalm we find the word God. Dear people today, Christian friends, you will be going home, I know, as probably I will be wherever I dwell, and we'll be turning on the radio or whatever just to hear what's happening, to hear about the latest bomb. To hear about the latest threats. To hear about the breathings of recrimination and revenge. And when we've turned the button and shut out the media, blessed be God that we can bend the knee and speak to Him. God! I hope that we will be helped as our dear brethren come after I have briefly spoken, and that they will again, by the exercise of ministry, take every one of us by the wrist and put the hand of our faith into the hand of omnipotence. God, 7 times I say God is stamped upon this psalm. This is the great defense of deity. Let us think about some of the pictures of this psalm that I hope will be relevant just for our consideration. We have a beautiful picture of defense in verse 1 because it tells us there that God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Now God is described in that opening verse in 3 ways. He's a refuge, He's a strength, and He's a help. You could have a refuge that wouldn't be strong. You could have a refuge and it would be strong enough in itself. But once you would get inside, it might not give you much personal help. God is a refuge. God is a strong refuge. God is a refuge who has always helped His people. Thank God we have a refuge. We have a safe retreat. As we sing in one of our hymns, taking the words from another psalm, every Christian in this meeting this afternoon, we can climb higher than the stars. And on the wings of faith, by the exercise of prayer, and on the staircase of Scripture promise, we can climb to the rock that is higher than I. God is our help. That's you, that's me, that's Hezekiah. He is our refuge, into which we take retreat, and in which our fears are stilled, our nerves are steadied, our hopes are refocused, because God is our refuge. That beautiful little expression that the brethren have often spoken of, a very present help. I'll give you a literal rendering. It would not be good English, but it's a very wooden translation of the original Hebrew. God is a help exceedingly findable. You know, sometimes when you're in trouble, you need help. And you know people who could be a help, but you can't get in touch with them. You lift your phone or your cell and you make a call, but there's no answer. And you say, if only so-and-so was here, he or she could help me, but they're not findable in the crisis. But dear brethren and sisters, we will never find ourselves in a situation where God cannot be found. He is a help exceedingly findable. You know, it was this hymn, this Hebrew hymn, that stayed the heart of Martin Luther when the face of Europe was changing in the days of the Reformation, and it inspired that beautiful hymn which has come to us in English, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." That in turn was inspired by a period which Martin Luther spent in the castle at Wartburg. And I was speaking to someone who visited that city recently, and they went to see that mighty castle where Luther took his refuge. It's just about a mile outside the village, but you can hardly find it. It twists, and it turns, and it goes up a rocky precipice, and the path is very narrow, and it's very winding, and you're very safe when you get there, but you can hardly reach it. You know, the psalmist tells us that God is our help. But he's exceedingly accessible. He's exceedingly findable in times of trouble. Having looked at the picture of defense in verse 1, I want to look at a picture of disturbance in verses 2 and 3. In those two verses, we have four those. T-H-O-U-G-H's. Four those. And we'll have to look at them. He said in verse 2, "We will not fear those. The earth be removed. We will not fear, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea." Verse 3, "We will not fear, though the waters roar and be troubled." 3 again, "We will not fear, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof." Now I could spend a little time here, but I will forbear, because the psalmist, with the pictures of ancient Hebrew poetry, he thinks of things that are being shaken. He says, even though the earth should be removed. That's a shake. And then he thinks of things that are sinking. He said, even though the mountains that stand with mighty majesty should topple into the sea, and the landscape of and the skyline should be changed forever. And he said, those mighty mountains disappear, and what seemed to be stable shakes, and what seems to be high sinks. And then he says, even though the waters should swell. He says the mighty tidal waves should rise and swell. Mountains going down and tidal waves swelling. You know the people of New York. I've heard a number of them say in their reports that the landscape will never be the same again. The skyline is altered for many years to come. Those great buildings that seemed to tower skyward, they toppled onto the street and into Hudson Bay. And they're gone. This man says, I'm not thinking about the toppling of the tower. He says, I'm thinking about the changing, the sinking of the mountains. And he said, even though everything that's stable seems to shift, he says, we will not fear, because God is our refuge. I would have no idea how many fears there are within the breasts of those gathered in this audience. Some of you are afraid of losing your job, because these things will have repercussions for employment. Some of you are afraid of maybe visits to the hospital that you'll be making soon. Some of you are afraid of problems that you have in your domestic circumstances. You know, fear is one of the emotions which has a tremendous effect upon our health. Dear brethren and sisters, may God help us. This is not foolhardiness. He says, God is our refuge, therefore. Therefore. He said, this absence of fear is not just because we are particularly courageous. He says, this absence of fear is because we know God. So he said, in the midst of disturbance, I want to think about a picture of delight. Because verse 4 is not now defense or disturbance. It's a picture of delight. He says, there is a river. You know, those swelling oceans that we had in verse 3. The turbulence of those tumultuous waves. We need to get into the spirit of the ancient poet and hear the crash of the mighty waves of verse 3. And then you move into verse 4 and there's just the lovely trickling of a quiet stream. He said there is a river. The streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. Now, if the background to this psalm is, and I'm quite confident about it, if it is the days of Hezekiah, many of you will have read, if you haven't actually visited in the city of Jerusalem, you will have read about one of the wonders of ancient architecture, Hezekiah's tunnel. Now, it's a very interesting piece of work. It has amazed archaeologists and even engineers of the present day. You see, in light of the problems that were coming with the possibility of the siege of the Assyrian army, Hezekiah knew that one of the big problems I have to face is a water supply for the city. So he got to work. Jerusalem is not like the other great cities of the world. Jerusalem doesn't have its Nile. Jerusalem doesn't have its Mesopotamia. Jerusalem doesn't have its Fraser River. It's the greatest city on the face of the earth without a river. But there is a river. And Hezekiah went outside the wall to the Gihon Spring, and he covered over the Gihon Spring. And he set his workmen to business, and underneath the wall of ancient Jerusalem, they chipped a hole through the solid rock. Workmen from this side, workmen from that side. They weren't like people in some parts of the world where they build two bridges, one from the either side, and find them a foot missing in the middle, or anything like that. Once they got right there, they came from one side and the other, and the tunnel, and he channeled right to the pool of Siloam from the Gihon Spring, and the men came and set their siege. And the people all came to the walls with their glasses of water. And old Sennacherib, he said, where did they get the water? There's no river around here. We thought we had them caught. We put our army right round the whole city, and we thought in the absence of a river, they'll have to capitulate because of thirst. He says, where did they get the water? What he couldn't see was, hidden from his eye, there was a stream. Underground. My dear brethren and sister, you know, one of the blessings that makes Christian survival possible in a world where we are besieged by every kind of problem is that flowing from the very throne of God is an invisible stream. There is a river. And can I say that the water in that river is just as clean and clear in 2001 as it was in 701 B.C. I went to visit hospital. I maybe told it here the other night. I went to visit hospital, a brother. When I finished, across the other side of the place, a man called me. I didn't know him. He said to me, is that it? I said, yes, that's a friend of mine. He said, I want to ask you. He said, we all had surgery here. It was quite serious surgery. And he said, before each of us went to surgery, he said, we were nearly distracted. He He said, "Do you see your friend?" He said he was as calm as could be. And he said, "They came and offered him tablets. Now, if they come and offer you tablets, you take them and I'll maybe take a double dose." But they came and offered him tablets, and he says he didn't even need them. He says, "I couldn't see anything different." And he says, "When we were distressed and nearly out of our minds, fearing what would happen the next day," he said, "he was just as calm as could be." You know what was happening? Into that hospital ward there was a stream. And that Christian, quietly resting upon the omnipotent arm of Jehovah, there was a river coming invisibly from the throne of God. You know, the oceans of God are full of water. And the living wave that flows into this world by the rivers of providence, he was drinking from them. There is a river, the streams whereof make glad the city of God. I'll tell you, Christians, today, I'm getting worried about getting home. This hasn't been a bad place, but I wouldn't like to stay. No, thanks. I'm hoping to get back to Ireland, and it would be a little bit worrying, but I'll tell you what to do. When the waves are crashing, and the mountains are collapsing, and the tide of terrorism is rising, you dip the pitcher of your faith into that river. Hide in the refuge. Take a drink from the river. Because God is our only strength and stay in times like these. Well, we have a picture. I leave out some of those verses. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. I would need to say a little bit on that verse number 7. It is repeated in verse 11. The God of Jacob is our refuge. The Lord of hosts is with us. Now, the important feature here is this. God has already been introduced as a refuge in verse 1. Now, twice, verse 7 and verse 11, he is again described as a refuge. The important thing is that the Hebrew word in these two later texts, 7 and 11, the word is totally different from verse 1. In verse 1, the main idea in the word is a hiding place. God is a hiding place. In verse 7 and 11, the main idea in the word refuge is that God is a high place. This is a refuge. Actually, I was going to say, this is not going down into a bunker. You know, there's likely a boy in this world somewhere today and he's away down in a cave or a bunker somewhere. And he has caused a lot of trouble. We'll not mention his name, but you have a fair idea. And his security is getting more deeply buried in earth. This is not going down into a bunker. This is top security. Top security. High level security. God is our hiding place. God is our high place. That's the word of verse 7. You see, I have noticed, and you'll have noticed it, that when people get into trouble, they very often told me this, they become so absorbed in it. And they would tell me, they say, "David, look, do you see from this what's happened? We can talk about nothing else. We can think about nothing else. And we're talking about it at the breakfast table, and we're talking about it at the supper table, and we're talking about it when we're going to bed, and it's just getting us down, and we can't get above it." My dear Christian friend, God can help you to get above the trouble. Will you let me speak to you, because I come from a country, like some of these other men, where there has been a good degree of terror. And many of us have had relatives seriously touched by the terror. And it was something that dominated news every hour of every day. And that is one problem. Sometimes a Christian can become so occupied with the troubles of this world that it can upset his communion with God. And the thing can take you down. My dear Christians, let us remember today that God can lift us above the trouble Is there someone here and your family difficulties and these things that I have mentioned, they're really encompassing you? Maybe it's marriage problems. Maybe it's personal problems. Maybe it's business problems. And you're not praying. You can't pray. And it's getting, and you're not reading the scripture. And it's getting you down. I say, you get back to God. And God will not only give you a refuge to take you apart from the trouble, but God will be a high place that will lift you above the trouble. Now, I'm going to conclude because, well, if all the brethren be like me, you'll get 5 speakers. And that'll even be a bonus. I want to speak about a picture of disarmament. You know, I love this because in the days of trouble, the psalmist in this lovely poem, he looked forward to a brighter day that was coming. He said in verse number 8 and 9, he said, "Come and behold the works of the Lord, the desolations in the earth. He maketh wars to cease." This is the text for today. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow asunder and cutteth the spear, and he burns the chariot in the fire. Oh, dear brethren and sisters, I think that this is taking us forward to a great day of millennial peace. And the one who's coming here, the King of Righteousness, will also be the King of Peace. Isn't it a marvelous day when he will make wars to cease to the end of the earth? You know, once they have ceased to the end of the earth, there'll be no more need for any arms. Because that's the reason people need arms here, because there might be some fellow in a place called Afghanistan or somewhere, and he will come against them. Listen, it's hard for us to envisage it. There's a day coming, according to the Bible, when there'll not be a terrorist found on the soil of this globe. And there'll not be a pocket of resistance anywhere, right to the ends of the earth, from Alaska to Australia, from Iceland to India, from Chile to China. Christ will sit upon the throne at Jerusalem, and the peace of Christ will encompass the globe. He takes a look at the battlefield, and he said, in this great field, in this psalm, it will no longer be casualties, human casualties. He says he'll break the bow, the broken bow. And he says he'll smash the spear. And he says he'll burn the chariot. Broken bows, smashed spears, and charred chariots. You know, the bow in ancient times was the long-range missile. I'll tell you the truth, I would love to see the end of them. I've never even seen the beginning of one, but I would like to see the finish of them. But great if all the long-range missiles were gone. The spear in ancient times was the short-range missile. And the chariot here is not the war chariot. It's the supply wagon. So he says, neither long-range nor short-range missiles. And he said, even the wagons that supply the war will not be needed. All supplies gone. There'll not be a standing army left in the world. There'll be no more military camps. Dear brethren and sisters, we appreciate that God is an answer. He maketh wars to cease. You know, I remember, I tell it, it's out of date now, but you'll forgive me for telling it. When Mr. Reagan was president across there, he and his counterpart Gorbachev met on one occasion in one of the summits, and it was reported afterwards that part of their conversation went like this. Reagan said to his man, he said, "Do you know, here we are," he said, "two men in one room." And he said, "We're the two most powerful men in the world." And he said, "Between the two of us, we have it within the power of our hands either to bring the world to peace or to bring a third world war." Well, with all due respect for the good man, I would like to tell him that the possibility of bringing world peace is not in the hands of two men. It's just in the hand of one man. The hand that bears the mark of the Roman nail is the hand that will wield the scepter of universal rule. and the brow that so beautifully wore the Roman crown of thorns is the brow that will so competently carry the diadems of government across the earth. We sang yesterday morning, Jesus shall reign. Dear brethren and sisters, he'll make wars to cease and peace in every corner. Is it any wonder the psalmist says, be still and know that I am God. That's it. I am God. Actually, that word be still. Our brother Funston was telling us about it last week. He made reference to this beautiful little psalm in his ministry at Squamish Conference. That word be still is a word that means about hands. It's often translated about feeble hands. And hands relaxing. You know, when you try to do something and your hands fall back faint. That's the idea of the Hebrew word. It means hands that can do. Actually, I remember a professor telling us, he said you could put it into idiomatic English, something like this. Hands off. And know that I am God. And if it is the background of Hezekiah's time, you know, they looked out across the walls and they saw the thousands of Hezekiah's, of Sennacherib's soldiers all around Jerusalem gathered in the valley. And they looked out the next morning and there was 185,000 of them lying dead. Who says who did it? The Lord sent an angel and there wasn't a human hand in the whole business. One angel did 185,000 without a human hand. God says, hands off and know that I am God. And as our brother told us, I'll conclude with this. He said, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Who are the hosts? Mr. Hull will tell us tomorrow morning. But you know, I'll make this two suggestions. The hosts can be either angels or stars. The Lord of hosts. Well, you say that's not much use to me because I'm neither an angel nor a star. Well, you may not be. But as well as being the Lord of hosts, he's the God of Jacob. And Jacob was no angel, and he was no star. And the Lord of hosts was also the God of Jacob, and he is with us, and he will be our refuge. It's no wonder that, you know, Psalm 23, some of you check it out, it is 54 words in Hebrew. Take 26 from the first, take 26 from the end. The two Hebrew words in the middle of the psalm come out in our English as four. Thou art with me. That's the center of Psalm 23. It's the center of the Bible. It's the comfort for our hearts. And as John Wesley said when he was dying, he said, the best of all is, God is with us. Dear brethren and sisters, God is with us. May we trust him more and serve him better as we have the prospects of better days ahead. May the Lord bless his word.